JG 1. Number 8A.
Step gradually and look now at this concept of the buildup from the brain in its holographic universe into mind in its ideational universe, the difference between the first and second record of creation. In working with this concept of a holographic universe, I'll just want to mention a few points by the so-called founding father of this concept. It's in brain research. I'm working from a book called The Holographic Paradigm and Other Paradigms that was edited by Ken Wilber. It has different articles in it. This one I'm interested in. It was by Carl Prebram. He was a Stanford neurosurgeon and neuroscientist interested in brain research, who had a book on the languages of the brain. And he had spent much of his time studying the brain, how it operates, its many ways, and how it operates like a hologram. He's one of the founding people. Certainly today we could name many names who are hooking on to the same concept. He says then that in discussing what the holographic universe involves, he says a hologram is a special type of optical storage system. And we'll take a look at the particulars of it. He says, where each individual part of the picture contains the whole picture in a condensed form. That the part is in the whole, and the whole is in each part. It's a type of unity and diversity, and diversity and unity. Therefore, the key point I'm driving at is that the part always has access to the whole. Thus, if the brain did function like a hologram, then it might have access to a larger whole, a field domain, a holistic frequency realm that transcends spatial and temporal boundaries. And he says, and this domain might very likely be the same domain of transcendental unity and diversity described and experienced by the world's great mystics and sages. So he shows here now, therefore, that we're working perhaps with a brain which is functioning like a hologram, and that that brain might have access to a field of information, which is a holistic frequency realm, which is imparting information to that brain, making the brain think, a field of information that is programming the brain, and the brain is taking that information and projecting it. That's his basic premise. The next fellow in with this holographic universe concept is David Bohm, also a theoretical physicist who has worked at one time at the University of London. I think he also worked with Einstein. He is also, at about the same time as Prebram, became aware that of this concept, that his work in subatomic physics and in a quantum physics work led him to the conclusion that the physical entities, which seem to be separate and discrete in space and time, were actually linked and unified in an implicit and underlying fashion. In Bohm's terminology, under the explicate realm of separate things and events, an implicate realm of undivided wholeness. And in this implicate whole is simultaneously available to each explicate part. So he sees that the universe, this holographic universe, he explains as having an implicate realm, a realm which is undivided wholeness. And in this implicate realm, there is this information of which it makes known. You could also call that implicate realm the deep structure realm. In that implicate deep structure realm is this of undivided wholeness. They talk about how there is a matrix of oh gosh, how do they say it? I'll come up to it here in a minute. There's a deep lying matrix, an invisible matrix of, yes, they call it an invisible matrix that generates concrete reality. And that out of this implicate order of this invisible latent matrix, this reservoir or pool of information, this deep structure, comes the explicate order, comes the expression of that, huh? The surface structure. So he calls the deep structure the implicate order and the surface structure X, going out of the implicate, you exhale, the surface structure information. And that ties in with the holographic universe, because if the brain is like the implicate order, just as an example, it would have all be the deep structure that houses the information, and that exhales it in the explicate order to be the surface structure of its image. Yet they also see and talk today that there's something beyond the brain, we know too, that can house this information, invisible matrix, which is then housing this unified, morphogenetic field of information, and that field of information is thinking the brain, which is projecting its image. So with that as a general view into points, they see then that it's not, the brain is not only projecting, Prebram says, its local image, but he says maybe the world is a hologram. And he says maybe that we're just members of an audience in this large holographic universe. And that's where today you get the books like Talbot and those called the holographic universe. They don't just see that our little individual experience is holographic, but this is implying that the whole world is based on a holographic image. Therefore, there is this invisible, implicate order, as I said, of information feeding the brain, but feeding the universe as one gigantic hologram of which we're just part of itself. So they say that nature of reality itself is holographic, and that within that the brain also operates holographically. And Prebram says then that maybe the world is indeed, as the Eastern religions have said, a major magic show, and that its concreteness is an illusion. Isn't that terrific? Bohm says, what appears to be a stable, tangible, visible, audible world is an illusion. It is dynamic and kaleidoscopic, but not really there. He says, what we normally see is the explicate or unfolded order of things, rather like watching a movie. But there is an underlying order that is the mother and father to the second generation of reality, the implicate or enfolded order. The enfolded order harbors our reality, much as the DNA in the nucleus of all the cells harbor potential life and directs them and nature in its unfolding way. Oh gosh, isn't that beautiful language? So you see how in order to where the world is today and how we would behind the mark if we don't keep up with what's being seen. Now, they base this holographic paradigm in the entire universe on one unifying factor that they felt was unifying it all. And this unifying factor is that new element that they're calling. They aren't calling an atom the basic constituent of reality, but they're calling the product of a thought force, the second degree reality, which is called information. Information is a product of thinking, a product of thought force, they say, but of the brain thinking, and the brain thinks gives out information. That's its product. But they'll go beyond the brain and say, well, there's an intelligent universe, a universe that thinks too. But that universe that thinks is giving us information, which is programming the brain, which is then giving out its information. So they put here, they say that what is central then to the universe is information. And they say that consciousness is information, and that the different forms of consciousness refer to different hierarchical levels of information. The intensity of consciousness at any level is a function of the amount of information at that level. So information seems to be tying together this, and as we will see, information becomes a quality separate from idea. What Mrs. Eddy will call that, all that information is idea. But let's take a look at what they're seeing about information. They say here, and we just look at it generally, this is in a book by Jeremy Campbell called The Grammatical Man. He says and asks on page 15, the open question, he says, is what do codes used for sending messages back from spacecraft have in common with genes on a molecule of a DNA? Something is tying spacecrafts together with DNA. How is it that the second law of thermodynamics, a physicist's discovery, is related to communication so that we can speak of the entropy of a musical score or a page of a text or of a conversation? Why are knotty problems in the mathematical theory of probability connected with the way we express ourselves in speech and writing? Isn't that terrific? Answers? The answer to all this question is information. And the very fact that a single concept can link so many diverse ideas is an indication of the great generality and its power. He says on page 15, information in its pedestrian concept just means news, intelligence, facts, ideas that are acquired and passed on as knowledge. But he says information actually has a deeper meaning, he says, and that deeper meaning even comes to us from medieval times. The word was used in a more active, constructive meaning. And he says this is the meaning that the scientists are taking today, that information is something which gives form or character to matter or to the mind. A force which shapes conduct, trains, instructs, or guides. So it's that information universe, that universe, they say, which is full of information everywhere, which is giving shape to the brain or mind, and that is shaping our conduct, our and instructs and trains and guides us. So that information that's coming to the mind-brain concept is instructing us, guiding us, and giving shape to our conduct. And how do they define information? Well, the cybernetician then, Jeremy Campbell said, Norbert Wiener said, information is information. It isn't matter or energy. Isn't that terrific? Information has nothing to do with these atoms in motion, as Democritus thought, and the Newtonian machine world of the Cartesian metaphysical dualism, that the brain could be just atoms in motion. Thinking, because the atoms are moving around, they're hitting all these little things going on in the brain, and we think, because the minute those atoms stop moving, the brain stops thinking. They say, no, that isn't the element. Information has nothing to do with the element, that definition as a primary element. So they move away from atoms as an element, now into more the thought force, which is information, which is not matter and energy. And a philosopher has said that information is information. It's not mentality or subjectivity. It's not in our mentality or in our subjectivity. It's just information that exists in the universe, not an intelligent universe that has information and it's programming the brain. So with that, we can see then this whole sense of the buildup of how information and the holographic universe is viewed today, and we will build that subject up gradually to how then Mrs. Eddy would say, no, that it's beyond the brain and the holographic universe, all is mind and its idea, and you've got to fight it out on this point. I think we'll take a break now because I want to go into a big subject and we should have a break. All right, so we start our buildup of the vision that we've now seen. And I think I'll just take us back to a fundamental exercise that lets us understand our standpoint. We know then that Mrs. Eddy gave us those three phase transitions called the 3 degrees, that the Christ comes to us and takes away from us in 3 degrees a misunderstanding of reality. The divine algorithm, the twofold binary rhythm of infinity, called the Christ idea. Here, the second aspect of the upward flow of that way, ascending way, after the downward causation, it impels us from a material physical paradigm or explanation of the universe, where to that paradigm, when asked what is reality, it would say that reality is matter and material laws. And when we ask that material paradigm, how do we approach reality, it would say, well, through the 5 physical senses. But we would say, well, how are solutions attained and judged or determined? They're always determined according to the material situation. And we'll say, well, is that paradigm the ultimate paradigm of the universe? And we say no, because there are anomalies, there are irregularities, but that paradigm breaks down. It's involved with entropy. It goes into a state of chaos. And therefore, it really has within itself a pessimistic arrow of time that takes it towards a state of death. The next paradigm that she said we would go through, we'd come out of a physical explanation and into a transitional stage called the human, with its moral qualities, out of the physical realm of reality being all those points. She says on page 115, she gives all those qualities of the material realm as evil beliefs, passions, appetites, fear, depraved will, self-justification, pride, envy, deceit, hatred, revenge, sin, sickness, disease, death, all those unreality concepts which form in mortal mind an illusionistic world, which she calls unreality. She said we'd then go through a second degree where evil beliefs begin to disappear, and that would be into a more mental realm, a mental realm of the human mind, which was built much more on the qualities of humanity, honesty, affection, compassion, hope, faith, meekness, temperance, where reality is based then on our mentality, filled more with these moral values and thinking. How do we approach reality? Well, through my right thinking, through my thinking for humanity, thinking honestly, thinking lovely, thinking full of hope, thinking full of faith, thinking full of meekness, thinking full of temperance. And we would judge reality always according to the mental condition. On the physical paradigm, we would ask each other, well, how are you today? Well, I don't feel so well, you know. Arm hurts and the legs aren't working too well. We'd explain how we are according to our physical movements and body. We'd give body reports to each other. When we come into the mental realm and we'd say, well, how do you judge a situation? We'd say, well, how are you today? I'm depressed. I really feel depressed. I just can't get out of it. I don't know what to do. There's something seems to be wrong. You see, our report would be, we'd give mental reports, the state of our mentality. And if our mentality is fine, oh, we're fine. If it isn't, we're not so good, huh? We'd say, is this mental realm the ultimate? And we'd say, no, there's an anomaly, because mentality also breaks down. Hence the many mental health institutes and the psychiatrists and psychologists themselves running screaming to the door, because so many people have mental problems today that they decide they're going to change their profession to being maybe working on bicycles that take tours through these nice mountains. It's much better than hearing all these problems. So we can see then that mentality also is subject to the pessimistic arrow of time. Then Mrs. Eddy said we would break into what she would say was reality, full of understanding and reality values of wisdom, purity, spiritual understanding, spiritual power, love, health, wholeness. And she said in this third degree, mortal mind and its values would disappear, and man is God's image would appear. And this is therefore what reality is, God and its idea, all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all, tied together by soul. And how do we approach reality? Through the mind of Christ. Thank goodness. This is the level that we reason from cause to effect in the science of mind. We begin with mind, which can only be understood through its idea and not through its opposite matter. It's only beholding in science the perfect idea and sticking with the idea. She says all is infinite mind and it's infinite idea, and you fight it out on this point. So we only see the world as mind sees the world, as spirit sees the world, as soul sees the world, as principle sees the world, as life sees the world, as truth sees the world, as love sees the world, operating as the word Christ, Christianity, on the different levels of consciousness as symbolized by the model of being. How are solutions judged and attained? Well, we accept our state of being as only perfect. We no longer are in that state of complaining about the good and the bad. We only behold in science the perfect man and see ourselves only as the perfect idea of God, as the image and likeness of God. There are no anomalies. All anomalies are resolved, and we're only under the ever-cybernetic, self-operating, self-regulating, self-organizing, error-preventing, error-correcting circuit of God, which is the optimistic arrow of time, which handles the pessimistic arrow of time through its feedback system. Now, what we see then is that there's only one reality. That the first degree of what we call mortal mind or mortal consciousness looks at the universe of mind through a dark glass. It looks at that universe through its mortal concepts. Mrs. Eddy said there was no mortal mind. It's just a word she made up. And she says to indicate that a consciousness was filled with these evil beliefs, passions, appetites, false will, self-justification, duality, friction, the reasoning out from the second record of creation, all that which is full of the electrical charge that causes nothing but problems for us all. Huh? That is the misconception of reality. So it's that We're looking at reality always, but through a dark glass, Paul said. So it distorts the reality, and what we see is illusion. We say to ourselves, well, what is an illusion? Well, when we look up the definition of an illusion, we see that it means this, and I'll just quickly get a hold of it. An illusion is the action of deceiving, the state or fact of being intellectually deceived. It's a misapprehension. It's a misleading image presented to the vision. Something that deceives or misleads intellectually. It's a perception of something objectively in such a way as to cause misinterpretation of the actual nature. See, that's an illusion. It's a misinterpretation of reality. And because we have a misdefinition of reality, calling it physical. We saw that with the sciences. Mrs. Eddy said, all science is divine. You've just called it physical based on these little atoms in motion, but that's not what's going on at all. They were just thought forces at work. The thought forces of electricity. Atom is nothing but electricity. It can be explained according to electrical movements around a nucleus. And therefore, she says, mortal mind is excess electricity. And so, therefore, she says, you've misrepresented reality on a dualistic, frictional, electrical basis. And she says, and that is misleading you intellectually. It's your perception of something which has been caused by a misinterpretation of the actual nature. That's an illusion. It's a pattern capable of reversible perspective. Oh my, that is wonderful. Gee, when I get to these various diagrams, you will see that an illusion is that you can see one thing one way, and not the other. An example would be, it's a pattern capable of reversible perspective. I had a nice cube. You know, if you're looking at a cube, you would see, sometime doesn't the cube go in, and then some doesn't, sometime the cube come out, and in the optical illusion.